Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DeGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here on the 18th floor. At 303 Wacker. And it's Nick DeGilio here, and we're here till 5 a.m. It's Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. We are going to talk about the difference between supper and dinner. And a lot of other really cool stuff. That's all coming up. Our phone number is 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And there you go. It is Monday, and that means it's time for the Monday morning movie reviews. But my partners that join me every Monday morning to do the movie reviews are both on vacation. Colin is in the middle of a road trip where he's driving around the South, and Eric is in Vegas where he spends a lot of time over the course of the years. They go to Vegas all the time. He's got a family vacation in Vegas. So they're not going to be joining me this morning, but our good friend Jim Leskowski is going to join us. We've only got a couple of movies to review, so we're going to be talking about some of the other stuff. Jim is the founder of Now Playing Network. He is the host of the Voices and Visions podcast, and you can check out nowplayingnetwork.net for more information. We're going to talk about some other things, his some of the latest podcast interviews that he's done. We're going to talk about some of Jim's music, and Colin and Eric and I all a couple of weeks ago unveiled our favorite movies of 2018 so far, since we were halfway through the year. So we're going to have Jim give his thoughts on that, and then we're going to review the two movies that came out, the Teen Titans Go to the Movies and Mission Impossible Fallout. So that's all coming up, and we want to thank Jim for sitting in for us, and let's welcome him to the show. Jim, welcome.
Hey, Nick. It's so great to be back on again. Eric and Colin work hard and deserve some time off. I'm kind of grateful they chose this particular weekend, and we'll get to it, of course.
Yeah. But there's other stuff that we want to talk about. Tell everybody about the Now Playing Network, and then tell us about Visions and Voices and Vision.
Yeah, so the Now Playing Network hosts a lot of great podcasts, and in some cases, they are in the spirit of your show, since obviously people like myself and Eric Childress, of course, grew up listening to WGN. And, well, we wanted to produce our own sort of pop culture content. And, we'd sort of do it in the comfort of our homes. And it's, been a blast for us. The explosion of podcasting in general is kind of it's been a blessing. And I'm grateful for it. I'm grateful to have put this, network together. And what I like about Eric's show, Movie Madness, is that it's kind of become a nice showcase and a great series of conversations with another great Chicago critic that I know you're familiar with, Sergio Mim.
Yeah.
And both Eric and Sergio talk a lot about recent Blu-rays and DVD releases on Movie Madness, and I always enjoy, because, of course, there's digressions, as you're familiar with, and Sergio is we call him the Wikipedia of film knowledge, because he knows so much about older cinema in particular. And I always get like an education as I'm listening to Movie Madness. So I'm grateful for that show to be on the network. And of course, my show mainly focuses on interviews, and that's Voices and Visions, sometimes with unknowns or maybe names people aren't as familiar with. Like up and coming directors and writers and musicians. And then other times I've been blessed to talk with people like Stephen Tobolowsky and John McNaughton, Leah Thompson, and most recently, once again, Keith Gordon returned to the show. So those two shows are available, along with a lot of great pop culture content with Pure Cinema, Supporting Characters, Vinyl Emergency, Drinking at the Movies, Tracks of the Damned, my old show, Directors Club, and a brand new podcast that I wanted to give a quick shout out to, because it's hosted by Supporting Characters Bill Ackerman, and it's a show called From the Neighborhood. He's basically interviewing kind of behind the scenes, like lesser known names, people who have essentially worked on David Lynch's Blue Velvet. Mm. Everyone from like key grips to makeup to effects. Basically all those names that scroll during the closing credits, he's trying to track them all down and ask them what it was like working with David Lynch on Blue Velvet. And that's a whole podcast that he's dedicating himself to. And it's really cool so far. So I highly recommend From the Neighborhood, and they can check out that show over at nowplaynetwork.net, along with all the others.
All right. Very, very cool. All right. Well, listen, you mentioned some of the recent interviews that you had for Voices Visions, and What was it like to interview Leah Thompson? That must have been fun.
Yeah, it sure was. I mean, it's quite nice when, you know, a publicist just shoots me an email, sometimes out of the blue, but they ask, you know, hey, do you want to interview someone? And, you know, more often than not, there's, you know, maybe a debut feature film coming out from a director, and I'm not as familiar with them. But then every once in a while, you get a name like Leah Thompson. And I was fortunate enough to talk with, you know, the lovely actress, and now she's a director.
Yeah.
And, of course, people know her from Robert Zemeckis' masterpiece, Back to the Future, Some Kind of Wonderful, All the Right Moves. We mainly focus on her new film, which was written by one of her young, you know, 20-something daughters. And it's a really nice, sweet, low-key romantic dramedy called The Year of Spectacular Men, which is which people can check out on VOD. But it was really great to talk with Leah because I learned a lot about her process and just, like, what she's learned from people like Zemeckis, working with, you know, she's worked with a lot of great names.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it was a really great conversation. And the movie itself is quite charming, especially when you have Zoe Deutsch, you know, as a co-star. Because she's, you know, obviously Leah Thompson's daughter and plays a significant role in the film, too. And, you know, interviewing her was just a delightful experience. She's just so down to earth and so nice. And, of course, very receptive to my praise of her work in Back to the Future. So I'm really looking forward to seeing where she goes as a filmmaker now, and you know, maybe when in the future I'll get to interview her some more.
Yeah, well, I think she's great, and I always have, and I've never interviewed her, but I've heard only good things. I know that Eric hosted a screening of Back to the Future some years ago, and a whole bunch of the cast members showed up, and he said that she was just just incredibly nice and very, very cool. So that's good to hear.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, Keith Gordon has been on your podcast now. Is this the third time?
Yeah. I mean, he's obviously, people would know him from Back to School and Dressed to Kill, and my favorite performance of his is still in John Carpenter's classic Christine, the film that I rewatched quite a bit when I was probably too young to see it.
Yeah.
But it was like one of those movies that my dad and I kind of bonded over, because he was into like old cars, and you know, he was, you know, it's modest Stephen King fan, and he really enjoyed John Carpenter films too. But we just sort of bonded over that movie, and I liked its portrayal of a nerd basically going after the bullies, which, you know, you kind of expect in the world of Stephen King. But I thought Keith Gordon's transformation in that movie is pretty remarkable. So, I've had the pleasure of interviewing three times now. And the reason why I reached out to him again was just because he recently directed the season finale of my, second favorite show on TV besides Atlanta, and that would be Legion.
Yeah, that's an insane show.
It's incredible. And
yeah.
It's so visually ambitious. Like, I mean, I have mentioned this to Keith too, that it reminds me at times of like watching a Mark Romanek music video. Mm-hmm. Like just some of the weird choices they do on that show. It's pretty great. But he had a lot of interesting things to say about his experience working on that show. In addition to the fact that he also directed, you know, the last season finale of Fargo.
Yeah.
So he's been working with Noah Hawley a lot and trying to get some of his own shows off the ground, hopefully in the future. And then we dived into the topic of underrated films of the 90s. I mainly gave him the floor to basically reveal his choices, and it was really great. He included a very underseen movie that I completely forgot that I had rented back in the day, and I'm sure you remember it. It's a film called American Heart.
Oh yeah, Jeff Bridges.
Yeah, totally. And I was like, oh my gosh, I completely forgot about that. And never really got like a proper Blu-ray release or anything. So I know it's available to seek if you want to seek it out. But I'd completely forgotten about it. And he brought up a lot of great titles too, and inspired me to make my own list. So we had a great talk. He's just one of those really, again, down to earth kind of movie geeks that, you know, you can talk to for hours on end, and you know, feel he's like a Stephen Tobolowsky too. You know, he has a lot of great stories to tell.
Yeah.
So it's always a blast to talk with.
Well, Keith, you know, he's been doing some really, I mean, he's working on you know, the stuff that he's directing for TV, he's working on some of the best TV shows that are on right now, and directing and directing the hell out of them too. So, and you know, directing for TV now is different than it used to be. I mean, directing stuff for TV now is you know, it used to be looked down upon, like, oh, you're directing TV, but that's not the case anymore. The quality of these television shows and the freedom with which these filmmakers, you know, get to work is pretty great, and he's doing some, you know, some great stuff. So. Now, your underrated 90s movies, I'm looking at this list, and I would have to, I mean, I think all of these, I agree with you. Now, are these in order, or are they just, like, random?
They're mostly random. They're just titles that sort of came off the top of my head, and, you know, the number one pick was one of the first times, like, you know, we kind of bonded back in 1997 because you recommended this film, and something I may not have gone on my way to see, but based on your recommendation, I made sure I did, and that's 187.
Yeah.
And that's, I'm glad you championed that movie still to this day.
Oh, I love it. I think it's great. It's my favorite Samuel L. Jackson performance. You know, Kevin Reynolds, the director, is one of my favorites. You want to talk about underrated director, right there.
Yeah.
But yeah, 187 was my favorite movie of that year, and I just thought it was, it's a stunning movie, and I'm glad that you included it. Zero Effect is also on the list. That's a really good movie, Bill Pullman fans. You also have Citizen Ruth, which is Alexander Payne's first breakout movie. And that's a great movie.
Incredible Laura Dern performance.
Oh, it's a great movie. And then Mother Night, speaking of Keith Gordon. Existence, David Cronenberg. I love that movie, and nobody saw it. And that's like, but the thing I love about Existence is that it's like David Cronenberg's greatest hits. It's like all the stuff we love about Cronenberg all just jammed into one movie.
Including the cast of many Canadian character actors. It's kind of a joy to watch it, but just for that alone, too.
Yeah. You also have Men Don't Leave on this list, which is Paul Brickman's great movie from 1990 that, again, nobody really saw, featuring incredible performances. One of my favorite movies. You also have Beautiful Girls on the underrated 90s movies, which I agree with 100%. Night Falls on Manhattan, a terrific movie. With the one and only Ron Liebman. Ron Liebman.
I remember seeing that again when I did the Sidney Lumet episode for Directors Club, and I just went, man, nobody talks about this movie, and they totally should.
It's really good. Andy Garcia, very good in it. Ron Liebman, terrific. It's a terrific movie. Hanging with the Homeboys, which is also one of my favorite guy movies on my list of favorite guy movies. Joe versus the Volcano. Colin is thrilled that you included that one.
Oh, yeah. And you know, watching it with him, you know, not too long ago, sort of reaffirmed that, yeah, this is a pretty terrific movie. Like, Ebert loved it, too, so I was very happy to read his take on it.
Yeah. All right, Jim, we'll talk a little bit more about this. Hang on a second, okay, because we've got a break.
Okay.
All right, Jim Liskowski is with us. Colin and Eric are on vacation this week. We've got two movies to review. We'll get to those in a second, but since we had a little extra time, we're going to talk more about Jim's stuff, and we're going to get his list of the first half of 2018, his favorite movies, which we unveiled, Colin and Eric and I unveiled, a few weeks ago. All right, we'll take a quick break for the news, and we come back more with Jim Liskowski on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. What's happening? We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios, 18th floor at 303 Wacker. We're here till 5 a.m. If it's Monday, that means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And we're also reviewing the new movies. Eric and Colin on vacation this week, out of town. So Jim Liskowski's been kind enough to sit in. We're talking about some other things before we get to the new movies, since we've only got two new movies to review. And we'll get to those in a little bit. Our phone number and text number is 312-981-7200. We're going to talk about the difference between supper and dinner. We're also going to talk about banned wedding songs. Songs that have been the ultimate list of songs that have been banned from weddings. And then I think we're just going to talk about bad music in general. So we'll get to that a little bit later on. All right. So we've been talking with Jim, and let's bring Jim Liskowski back. You can check out nowplayingnetwork.net for all the podcasts available there. Jim, welcome back.
Hello again.
All right. So real quickly, we'll finish off this list here. Stir of Echoes is also – that movie got overshadowed by The Sixth Sense.
And it's better than The Sixth Sense.
It's much better. It's much better than The Sixth Sense.
Definitely.
Georgia, which is a terrific movie that nobody saw.
It's still to this day my favorite Jennifer Jason Leigh performance. Yeah. I'm astonished when she performs that Van Morrison song. It blows my mind.
Yeah, she's great. Small Soldiers, which is a great satire by Joe Dante. Dick, which is another great satire. Andrew Fleming directed that one with two great performances. And this is like Michelle Williams before she became like, you know, Michelle Williams.
Right.
And it's a really funny movie. Croupier, which was the breakthrough performance for Clive Owen.
I remember seeing that at the Town Theater in Highland, and they sometimes show these little indie films like this, and I just went, who is this guy?
I know, yeah. I think that's what anybody who saw that movie when it was out was like, yeah, who is this guy is right. Screamers, which I haven't seen in a really long time.
I know. I'm excited to rewatch that. I know that Scream Factory is putting out a new Blu-ray for it, and I just, you know, I went through a huge Philip K. Dick phase. Yeah. And I remember thinking this was an interesting movie that not a lot of people talked about. But then again, I don't know if it still holds up, but I'm excited to see it again.
Yeah, it's been a long time since I've seen it. I remember liking it, though. This next one's one of my favorites, Living Out Loud with Holly Hunter. A phenomenal movie with great performances all the way around.
One of my favorite scripts.
It's a great script. It's brilliant. Richard LeGravenaise. It's just a great. It's a great movie. Terribly underrated. And then Freeway. If you want to see Reese Witherspoon really knocking it out of the park, she's so good in that movie.
Absolutely.
Kingpin, in my opinion, the funniest of the Farrelly Brothers movies.
100% true.
And then The Rapture. The Rapture with. Meeting Rogers, which is a really interesting movie and a great performance by her. She's really good at it. So
yeah, that's Michael Tolkien, man. What an incredible writer.
Yeah.
Like with that and Changing Lanes would be in the underrated of the
2000s. Kinda. Yeah, no question about it. I love that movie. So there it is. Those are underrated movies from the 90s, and you can hear discussions with Keith Gordon about that at NowPlayingNetwork.com, and it's VoicesVisions.net as well. All right, listen, a few weeks ago, right at the halfway point of the year, Colin and Eric came down to the studio and we revealed our favorite movies so far this year. And so we want to get your thoughts on this. Now, my number one and Eric's number one were the same. We picked Hereditary for the first half of the year, and Colin chose The Death of Stalin. So those were our top choices. So why don't you give
those
us yours?
Those are very good.
Why don't you give us yours?
Yeah, well, we do share the same number one with Hereditary. Mm-hmm. It unnerved me. I think maybe the last time it was that like shaken up was maybe the end of Blair Witch Project.
Mm-hmm.
There's been some great horror movies since then, of course, but I just felt like, oh my gosh, I'm like so beside myself with how wonderfully creepy and incredibly smart that script was, and also just what can you say about Toni Collette?
It's the performance of the year. I think it's the best performance I've seen all year. There have been a lot of good performances so far this year, but Toni Collette in Hereditary is just extraordinary. She's amazing.
And one title that did not get brought up, it's funny because we can absolutely 100% agree on number one, but my choice for number two,
mm-hmm.
We could not differ more on, and that's You Were Never Really Here.
Oh, God.
I know.
I hated that movie. Ugh.
It was like one of the more interesting experiences I had was like hosting a Q&A where I expected that reaction.
Yeah,
because this was like the Downers Grove crowd, and I wasn't sure how they were going to take it, and they were really into it. Like they had a lot of interesting ideas and a lot of good things to say about it. Maybe it's just a combination of Joaquin Phoenix and Johnny Greenwood Johnny Greenwood score that just floored me. So I mean, I just love.
Well,
it.
Look, I'm in the minority. I'm in the minority, Jim. Everybody likes that movie. Colin loved it. Eric really liked it a lot, and it just didn't do it for me. I mean, it just rubbed me the wrong way from the first scene on. So, all right, what else is on your list?
I'll just fly down through the rest. Obviously, this one was mentioned from Colin and Eric. Number three would be Paddington 2. Number four is Eighth Grade. Number five is I just
we didn't, you know, eighth grade wasn't out when we gave our lists. Otherwise, it would have been It would have definitely been on mine. It would have, and I think it would have been all three of our lists. But it wasn't because you know, eighth grade came out 2 weeks ago, so we had already revealed it, and it is a great movie. Right. Or last week came out last week. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I just adore it. Number five is Tully, which, again, great performances and a real nice return to form for for Reitman and Cody collaboration. I adored that movie. Number six was Sorry to Bother You. Mm-hmm. Number seven is Three Identical Strangers, one of the more interesting documentaries of the year so far.
Yeah.
Number eight would be Thoroughbreds. Number nine, Won't You Be My Neighbor? And number 10 would be A Quiet Place.
Ah.
Those are all my top picks for right now.
All right, very cool. Those are, you know, I mean, a lot, you know, we had some of the similar titles that were brought up. And yeah, and I, you know, I'm, you know, Thoroughbreds was number two on my list. That's a movie that I just, I loved and nobody saw it. And, and you know, the two performances by the ladies in that movie are just so great, and it's a wicked script, and I really, really, really love that movie. So,
yeah, I do too. And but at the same time, as I was watching it, I was feeling a little melancholy because of, you know, Anton Yelchin.
Yeah,
it was just like, God, this is his best work, and he's gone.
Yeah, I know.
You know,
I know. He's so good in it too. He's so good in it. I mean, it's such a great performance. And he's funny in it and weird. And I just, everything about that movie really worked for me. So,
absolutely.
All right. Okay. All right. Well, listen, before we get into the new movies, talk a little bit about what's going on with your music, Jim, because you also do music. You write music and perform and stuff like that. Tell everybody a little bit about that and how they can hear it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've been performing on and off as my moniker is Garden on a Trampoline. I would say it falls under the indie rock umbrella, and you know, for fans of like Wilco, I guess, because they're one of my biggest influences. And I put out a record fairly recently, and I'm planning on playing some shows hopefully in the near future, probably in the fall, just to, you know, promote it and support it. But it's called Altered State. And I was reading Patty Chayefsky's Altered States, and I for some reason I just started writing again like crazy, and it became like more along the lines of Matthew Sweet too, because it has a lot of energy and power pop going on. Probably like midway, I changed things up and, you know, actually turn up the amps and get a little louder than I normally do, because I've been more low key with most of my songwriting. But yeah, I just it's become more of a freelance thing. I don't actively pursue it the way I do with podcasting and writing now. But, you know, at the same time, it's been such a joy to teach, you know, the younger generations at Fusion Academy where I teach. And it's just great to get their response to not only my own music, but to hear them recorded at such a young age and seeing them so like adept and just incredibly good at technology and just seeing them make music the way they do now, it's pretty remarkable. Basically, you can make an album on your iPhone, you know?
Right.
So that's been part of the joy of just sort of, you know, I think that experience alone has inspired me to pick up the guitar again and do a lot more with music. But people can check that out at nowplayingjim.com.
All right.
Another website. So that most of my music is archived there, and some of it's instrumental, and some of it, it has a lot of, you know, some of my more personal stuff, I guess you could say. But yeah, no, I'm very proud of it, and you know, all the proceeds for Altered State, I made sure go to a good cause, especially since, you know, we were dealing with just immigrant children being taken away from their families, so I wanted to, you know, do some good and try to promote justice for that. And so anytime somebody purchases Altered State, the money goes to a good cause, and I made sure of that.
And also, speaking of a good cause, that compilation of the relief, the benefit for Puerto Rico and victims of Hurricane Maria is still available at voicesvisions.net, right?
Correct. Yes, it's linked there, and I'll add the link to that and Now Playing Jim. Thanks for reminding me, because that's important too.
Yeah. Okay, cool. All right, Jim, hang on, all right?
Okay, sounds good, man.
Jim Leskowski is with us. We've been talking some other stuff. You can check out Jim's stuff, his podcast, his music, his reviews, his interviews. That's all at the Now Playing Network, nowplayingnetwork.net for further information. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we got two movies to review, and that's coming up right after this on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everyone. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It's Monday morning movie reviews. Eric and Colin on vacation this week, so our good friend Jim Leskowski is filling in. We've only got two movies to review. Okay, Jim, welcome back.
Thank you again. Appreciate it.
All right, Jim, tell us about Teen Titans Go to the Movies.
Okay, so I knew absolutely nothing about the Teen Titans Go franchise whatsoever. I at first I was concerned because I was thinking, oh, what if I have another experience like Nick did with the Pokemon movie? I was hoping that wouldn't be the case. I began to hear through the grapevine that this is actually one of the funnier films out there for kids and adults, so I was curious. These characters originated as Teen Titans Go on the Cartoon Network and became a hit with the younger crowd, and it's easy to see why. The film's central premise is essentially satirizing the endless supply of superhero movies out there, but in ways that are a lot more clever than, you know, maybe the two Kick-Ass movies. The Teen Titans are essentially just a ragtag group. There's Robin, Starfire, Beast Boy, Cyborg, and Raven, and they just want more recognition and their own movie franchise, but they're not considered famous enough to warrant a franchise, so they sort of band together to force Hollywood to take them seriously. As Robin says at one point, having a movie is the only way to be seen as a real hero. And then they ultimately form an arch nemesis to legitimize themselves, because, of course, if they want to be heroes, they need a villain. And they find one in Slade, which is sort of a DC version of Deadpool, and is voiced by Will Arnett, who, strangely enough, voiced Batman in the two Lego movies, and just happy to break the fourth wall from time to time. Other guest voices include Jimmy Kimmel as Batman, singer Halsey as Wonder Woman, Will Wheaton as Flash, Patton Oswalt as Adam, Kristen Bell as a film mogul, and you'll get to hear a real surprise voice cameo as Superman, which I don't want to give away. I think it's better for people to see, to hear it for them and see it for themselves.
Yeah.
As is this whole movie, which I consider to be a very pleasant surprise. I mean, yes, the plot is kind of, you know, simplistic. There's eventually like a doomsday machine, of course, and a lot of familiar scenarios from, you know, the comic book universe. But it's interesting that they kind of criticize and take jabs at both DC, Marvel, and the Hollywood machine, and yet it's not cynical or mean either. This is just a kind of quirky, irreverent, sometimes loud animated comedy that, you know, I would say that it's, you know, kind of up there with something like the Lego Batman movie. It's just being kind of relentlessly entertaining and silly and in ways that I don't think would create on the nerves for most people. I mean, there's certainly its fair share of poop jokes, but it's also got a nice message about friendship and teammates and kind of just the ridiculous pursuit of fame and notoriety. So I don't know. I just think this is way more successful as a meta send-up of comic book superhero movies than either of the Deadpool movies, which I find to be forced, obnoxious, and kind of unfunny. And here they, you know, the writers put work into making, you know, these cute references, but that's not the only joke. Like, the reference is not just the joke. They make very clever jokes surrounding the reference and various comic book tropes to where I never felt it was lazy. I mean, again, this is definitely aimed more at the middle school crowd, but it goes down a lot easier than most crass DC films, or like I said, Deadpool. I kind of thought of it as like, well, maybe this is, you know, along the lines of like the Powerpuff Girls meets the Lego movie, which I think is a great way to spend 90 minutes. It's certainly not high art, but it's surprisingly smart in the way it executes jokes and quips. So, like I mentioned, I really liked the heartwarming moments. They didn't feel forced, and honestly, I would not be surprised to see the song that appears, and it's called Upbeat Inspirational Song About Life,
right.
which is performed with the Teen Titans and Michael Bolton.
Right.
And who knows, maybe it'll get some attention at Oscar time.
I would hope so.
It's wonderful.
Yeah.
I wouldn't put this up there, obviously, with like The Incredibles 2, but this is probably your best bet if you're a parent looking to share some laughs with your kids. So I'm surprised to say that I'm recommending Teen Titans Go to the Movies.
This, for me, is the biggest surprise of the year. I love this movie. I loved this movie. I thought it was hilarious. I mean, I laughed out loud the entire time at the cheap jokes, at the clever jokes, and this is a real smart movie, Jim. I mean, it's this is great satire. It's really funny. It's winking at the camera, and I thought the voice work was great. I thought the animation looked really cool. Now, I've seen the TV show that it's based on a few times. I wasn't like a regular viewer of it. I was aware of it, and I always thought it was pretty clever. And Will Arnett is the guy responsible, basically, for getting this thing off the ground. Because his kids watched the show, and he came in, his kids were watching the show, and he came in and sat down and had no idea what it was. And then, like, 15 minutes in, he's like, I'm getting on the phone, and I'm calling these writers right now, because I want to be a part of what these guys are doing. And so that's basically how it got off the ground. And it's colorful and it's funny I think it's one of the best DC movies I've ever seen. And I thought the handling of the characters was really neat, and it's really funny. And I think I'm sad that it didn't do well, over the weekend. I mean, it did not do well at all. And I'm really sad because it's a very entertaining movie. Now, granted, I'm not going to compare it to Incredibles 2. But it's certainly 9,000 times better than the Hotel Transylvania movie. I mean, if you're thinking about taking your kids to one of these movies, that's the one to go to. It only made $10.5 million over the weekend, and that's very disappointing. But I highly recommend this movie, man. I was completely blindsided by it. I had a blast for the entire hour and a half. And by the way, the person who does the voice of Superman, do you know his son does the voice for young Bruce Wayne?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's even cooler. Yeah,
his son did the voice for that. So anyway, I won't give anything away, but I highly recommend this movie. I just think it's very entertaining and a hell of a lot of fun. And it was really one of those, it's one of those times when you go to the movie and you don't know what to expect. You know what I mean? And you're in there and you're like, okay, I hope this is good. This might be cute. Maybe it's just for little kids and I'm not going to get it. But anyway, half an hour into the movie, by the time I was like falling off my chair laughing and just thinking everything was really cute and funny and clever, this one I think fires on all cylinders. And I think parents should take the kids and they're going to have a great time. Teen Titans Go to the Movies. I think it's great. So.
Yeah, I was genuinely surprised, and it definitely deserves more of an audience.
Oh, absolutely. No question about it. So I hope people go out and see it. It's really, really good. All right, Jim, hang on, okay? Take a break here on 720 WGN. All right, welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. The 18th floor at 303 Wacker. I'm your overnight dude every weekday morning from 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. It is Monday, and that means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke. And that's coming up. And we are going to talk about the difference between supper and dinner and some terms that people use in different families. And, of course, we have a list of the banned songs that were banned from weddings, the most banned songs from weddings. We'll get to that. And I think we're going to talk about some bad music in general. So that's all coming up. Again, our phone number is 312-981-7200. The Monday morning movie reviews continue. Colin and Eric are out of town right now. They're on vacation, and they will return the following week, because I'm off next week. I've got the big flashback convention coming up this weekend. So I will be there all weekend long, and then I usually, take some time off the following week. So I'm taking the week off. Brian Noonan will be sitting in for me next week, all of next week. So my thanks to Brian. We're going to have a fun time at Flashback. So there you go. But Jim Laskowski has been kind enough to sit in with us. You can check out all of his network of podcasts and his music and all that stuff. Just go to nowplayingnetwork.net for more information. Jim, welcome back.
Thank you much, Nick. Real quick, though, is the Q&A with Dana DiLorenzo going to be on Saturday for Flashback?
Saturday.
That's the day I'm going.
Saturday at 1 o'clock.
And
obviously, I will be moderating it.
You think?
Yeah. It's her and Ray Santiago, so it's both Kelly and Pablo together.
I'm so excited. I'm so excited to be there on Saturday. It's going to be a great day.
It's going to be fun, man. I mean, in the whole everything that's set up for that weekend is just going to be a blast. I mean, you got the Fright Night reunion and the screening outdoors on Saturday night. You got the Child's Play reunion and the screening outdoors on that Saturday night. Tom Holland, the director of those movies, is going to be there. There's five Jasons that you can get your picture with. There's a reunion of Friday the 13th, the final chapter, and they're going to screen that one too. It's just going to be a great weekend all the way around, and of course, my future ex-wife Dana DiLorenzo is going to be there too. So it's going to be fun to hang out with her. So it's going to be a good weekend. Advanced tickets, I think, are done. I think today is the last day that you can get advanced tickets. Then you have to get your tickets at the door. I would suggest getting advanced tickets, because that way you can get in a lot faster. For anybody who's interested, go to flashbackweekend.com, flashbackweekend.com. We'll talk more about it during the week. And coming up this week, Dana DiLorenzo is going to be joining us, and so is Rich Coes, Sven Gulli, who is also going to appear on Saturday. And my favorite part of the entire weekend every year is Rich hosting the costume contest, because it's just, he's so hilarious. I mean, we all know that Rich Coes is, you know, like a genius, and he's funny as hell. But in that element, when he's got these weirdos on stage with him in these crazy costumes, it's just, and for me, it's the most entertaining part of the entire weekend. And I always look forward to that. So anyway, the Q&A with Ray Santiago and Dana DiLorenzo is going to be 1 o'clock on Saturday afternoon. So there
you go. All right, I'm not going to miss it.
Yeah. All right. Awesome. Jim, tell us about Mission Impossible Fallout.
Well, speaking of entertaining, this is the sixth installment in the Mission Impossible franchise, which started all the way. It's crazy to
22
all
years.
The way back in 96.
22 years. It's 96. 22
wow.
years. We're gonna review the new one, but I want to talk, you know, about the franchise in general after we review the new one.
Definitely.
Because I think it's
I rewatched them all this week.
I think it's an important franchise to talk about. I really do. But anyway, okay. So Mission Impossible Fallout.
Yeah, so this is the first Mission Impossible movie, too, that it feels like a direct sequel to the previous film, and possibly that's due to the fact that parts 5 and 6 were directed by Christopher McQuarrie, who was previously known for writing the Oscar-winning screenplay for Usual Suspects. However, he has really stepped up to the ranks of great action filmmakers with the last installment and now this, which, like I said, takes place shortly after the events of Rogue Nation, with Ethan Hunt and the IMF team, which consists of Luther and Benji. Luther played by Ving Rhames, and Benji, of course, played by the delightful Simon Pegg, as they begin to chase down three missing plutonium cores. And this plutonium was stolen by a terrorist group called the Apostles, followers of a shadowy figure named John Lark, who clearly has a lot at stake and essentially wants to collaborate and free the imprisoned Solomon Lane, who is played by Sean Harris and was a big part of the last film. And he was also the mastermind behind the syndicate. So Hunt, being kind of the loose cannon that he is kind of given a babysitter in the form of Walker, played by Henry Cavill. And Walker is a CIA assassin of sorts, and he and his handler, CIA Director Sloan, played by Angela Bassett, they kind of frown upon Hunt's organization as just kind of like this outdated absurdity. But, of course, Alec Baldwin is there to save the day and make sure everything goes according to plan, hopefully. So once the pieces are all put into place, it essentially just becomes one of the more simple plots to date, in which we kind of know, okay, what the bad guys are after, and the good guys essentially need to, you know, beat them in order to retrieve the coveted plutonium. So the setup for this film, you know, felt very reminiscent of the previous films, which of course isn't a bad thing, because I genuinely enjoy the dynamics between the team members. That's it's always more than welcome to have them on board here. And I would say that my senses really woke up and I completely came on board for this film. The moment Cruise jumps out of an airplane attempting to dodge some storm clouds, and then it sort of evolves into one of the more memorable bathroom brawls since True Lies.
Oh my God.
And from that point on, I was giddy. I was 100% on board with everything. And despite this being the longest installment in the series, it flew by. It's relentless. And it's, again, just a great old-fashioned chase picture. But the action sequences are right up there with some of the best you'll see. I was never on board with Christopher McQuarrie until he wrote Edge of Tomorrow and then directed Rogue Nation, because I didn't care about The Usual Suspects, even though it was acclaimed. And then he went on to do The Way of the Gun, as well as the first Jack Reacher, which, it was okay. But, man, he has just become a remarkable director. And he just knows exactly how to utilize a great actor and movie star like Tom Cruise. The thing I noticed about Fallout is that I was laughing a lot more. There's just some great moments of levity sprinkled throughout all the nail-biting tension. The plot is secondary, I guess, but you're here for the action sequences, and you are not going to be disappointed. Like I said, it ranges from something minimal like a men's bathroom, and then culminating with a helicopter battle. Jeez. That pretty much had me clutching my seat. I know a lot of the focus is on Cruise, due to his age and his decision to perform all of his own stunts, and that is a huge highlight here, but props to McQuarrie. He's just become a real confident and skilled action director. There's little reliance on, CGI, and it's more practical. It's just beautifully edited and choreographed throughout. And also, I really like what Rebecca Ferguson brings to the table and to the franchise. She's just a joy to see kicking butt, and she has a lot of agency alongside Cruise here. Even to some degree, there is an interesting examination about making choices here, too, that I really appreciated. So there's a lot of humanity. There's a lot of stakes. It's not just like, everything's blowing up left and right. But the climax of Fallout is just, it's one of the more effective third acts I've seen. And it really did bring to mind, I was getting the same kind of feeling I got when I saw Die Hard or Terminator 2 in the theater. It's crowd-pleasing blockbuster entertainment. It might very well be the best entry in the series, and it is definitely one of the year's very best films. Can't recommend it enough.
Yeah. Man.
I know, I'm still catching my breath.
I got to tell you, man, this is just, this movie rules. You want to talk about nonstop action. The movie's 2.5 hours long. It felt like it was 55 minutes long. And it is relentless in its creativity, in the action sequences, and the plot's very simple. You know what it is? It does pick up where the last one left off. It's very simple. It's like, we got to get these bombs. We got to get the bombs away from the bad guy. And then what they do with the Henry Cavill character, the Walker character, is an interesting, an interesting twist on the whole thing. And it's the first movie where I've liked Henry Cavill. This is the first movie I've ever liked this guy in. I don't understand why he had to have the mustache. And I know that caused some problems with Justice League, that they had to CGI his mustache out. I'm not sure why he had to have the mustache, but it doesn't matter. He's really good in this movie, and the entire cast is great. And there's the great chemistry between them, and the fact that they are this cohesive unit, that comes across really, really well. It's not just Tom Cruise's show, although he gets to do all the crazy stuff. These characters, this team, they are a team, and that's what it's really about. You mentioned the sequence where they jump out of the plane. That's all one take. That whole thing is one take where they're struggling. He and Henry Cavill are struggling to jump through the what are you afraid of, a little lightning? And then that leads to what you said. This fight scene in the bathroom is ridiculous. It's just absolutely ridiculously cool and just great. And then that leads to another action scene. There's fantastic. There's a scene where Tom Cruise has to basically run through Paris to try and catch this other guy, and it's Simon Pegg trying to direct him because they've got a chip, you know, they got a tracer on Tom Cruise and on the other guy, and he's giving him directions via earpiece, and he's jumping out windows and he's jumping over roofs and so there's that. There's a sequence where he's ripping through the streets of Paris on a motorcycle where I was like, he's gonna die. He's gonna die. And it's like against traffic, and there's great truck sequence in this movie. Every conceivable form of transportation, they construct a fantastic action sequence out of it. And I don't, you know, the last 25 minutes of the movie with the helicopters and all that, I'm telling you, stunning. Absolutely stunning. You use the word giddy, and I was beside myself during that last 25 minutes, man. It's top notch. It's one of the best action movies I've seen. I say it's the best action movie since Fury Road, and that's high praise coming from me, considering how much I love Fury Road. I think it's the best of the Mission Impossible series, and it's definitely one of the best movies of the year. It is. I can't wait to see it again. And did you see it in IMAX?
I sure did. I still can't wait to see it again.
You have to see it in IMAX. You have to, because there are a bunch of sequences that are shot in IMAX. In the last 25 minutes, the helicopter stuff, that is just breathtaking. It was shot in IMAX, and I was seriously clutching my seat. It's great. All right, so we're going to take a break. Jim, hang on, okay?
Okay, sounds good.
All right, we'll talk a little bit more about Mission Impossible Fallout, which is spectacular, and then we're going to talk more about this series in general, the Mission Impossible movies. That's all coming up right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everyone. How are you? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here, 18th floor at 303 Wacker, here till 5 a.m. It's Monday morning. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke. And Monday morning movie reviews, we're continuing here. Eric and Colin are on vacation. Eric is in Vegas, and Colin and his girlfriend are on a road trip right now. And so Jim Leskowski is kind enough to join us to review the movies. We reviewed Teen Titans Go to the Movies very positively. I loved it. And we just reviewed Mission Impossible Fallout, which Jim and I both think is one of the best movies of the year. Jim, welcome back.
Thank you, man.
Hey, I also wanted to mention there's other things about this movie that I love. I wanted to mention how much I absolutely loved Vanessa Kirby as the White Widow.
She's so good
in it. She's so good. There's so much action in this movie. It really doesn't stop. And, you know the characters by now. So the setup is going to be simple. And it's basically like, okay, we got to get these bombs. And then, of course, now there's you have ticking time bombs and you have to beat the clock. This stuff is not new. You know what I mean? trying to disconnect a bomb before it explodes. That's been a trope in 8 million movies and on the TV series Mission Impossible. But it works here breathlessly. I mean, just ridiculously. And the way that part of the story is intercut with these incredibly complicated and beautifully directed action sequences. This is just a great movie in general, a great summertime movie, a great piece of entertainment, and I can't recommend it highly enough that you see it in IMAX. Seriously.
Oh, yeah.
This is a movie that is meant to be seen in the biggest screen possible, in the loudest way possible. I saw it in IMAX, my parents, and my parents flipped out over this movie as well. We all three of us were nuts afterwards. So, one of the very, very, very best movies of the year, and an incredible action movie that needs to be seen in IMAX, and I can't recommend it highly enough. Now, the Mission Impossible movies over the years, this is one of the only series, there's six films since 1996, this is one of the very few series of movies where there's not a bad entry, in my opinion. In my opinion, all of them are good, and some of them are great.
I think we're probably going to say the same thing. The only one I'm not as crazy about as the second one.
Right.
And it's crazy to say that just because of the director.
Right. John Woo directed it. Yeah. And I agree with you. I like it. I still like it. And I still recommended it. I just don't think it's as good as the others. The first one came out in 1996, directed by Brian De Palma, featured, a lot of really great action. And they did it. It was one of those movies that I remember, when they said it was going to be released, I was like, why is Tom Cruise going to do a reboot of a TV show, because I thought it was a dumb idea. Of course, I was intrigued because of the director, because Brian De Palma is the man. And it turned out to be great and really, really entertaining and had a, you know, we had a spectacular climax on a speeding train, which was fantastic. And so I know you liked the first one, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, the first time I saw it, I did fall under the unfortunate, it's changed, obviously, the unfortunate criticism of the time was, I can't follow, this movie is so confusing, I don't know what's going on, but like the set pieces stood out because anytime De Palma gets to, you know, play in his sandbox, it's
yeah.
just a joy.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, I think of the opening of Femme Fatale, and I go, well, that could have been in a Mission Impossible movie.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just, it's so breathless the way he does that. And of course,
it's also got the, you know, the iconic, you know, sneaking into the CIA and hanging, you know,
above. Yeah.
And with the sweat, he catches the sweat. That's a beautifully, beautifully structured sequence. And then they just keep getting crazier and crazier. Now, the second one, Mission Impossible 2, the one that John Woo directed, great. There are great set pieces in it. There was, for my sure. money, there was way too many, you know, face mask things in that one. That was like every 5 seconds somebody was not who they were and they were tearing masks off and all that stuff. Now, I know that that's part of the TV show and it's also part of the other films, but it just seemed they relied on that too much in the second one. And I was a little disappointed
yeah.
simply because it was John Woo and it wasn't great.
Yeah, and Thandi Newton was kind of wasted in it. I just didn't think they fully fleshed out her character. And yeah, it's just, it seemed like it had more of a lull than any of the other ones ever had, like halfway through. There hasn't been an action sequence in a while.
Like, yeah.
I got a little restless as I was rewatching it. But, you know, of course, there's a great climax. There's
yeah.
a great chase. There's a great motorcycle chase. So you have things to look forward to in the movie. It's just, it definitely is still the weakest, in my opinion.
Right. And then the third one, Mission Impossible 3, directed by J.J. Abrams, I thought was terrific.
Yes.
Not just because Kerry Russell was in it, but also I thought Philip Seymour Hoffman as the villain was fantastic. And I think my favorite villain of any of the six movies. I think Philip Seymour Hoffman, I think he takes the cake as the villain of all the movies.
Yeah, of course. And then, you know, I think it's just funny whenever they share screen time together, because I just think of, it's like a reversal of Magnolia.
Right, exactly.
Like, you know, and expect Philip Seymour Hoffman to say, like, I'm going to drop kick those dogs.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right. Jim, hang on, okay?
Okay.
All right, we're going to finish talking about the Mission Impossible series. The latest, Mission Impossible Fallout. Absolutely breathtakingly spectacular and awesome on every single level, and everybody should see it and see it in IMAX. All right, we'll come back and talk a little bit more about Mission Impossible, and then I'll tell you about the box office figures as well. That's all coming up right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here on Wacker in downtown Chicago. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke a little bit later on. And the Monday morning movie reviews had. And Colin and Eric, both on vacation right now. So Jim Liskowski has been kind enough to sit in. Jim, welcome back.
Hello again.
All right. We've been talking about the Mission Impossible series, the franchise. Both Jim and I maintain that there is not a bad entry in this series, and that the new one is, in my opinion, probably the best of the six, and it's just spectacular. So the next one, is on board is Mission Impossible: Ghost Protocol, which Brad Bird directed, and if I'm not mistaken, that's his only live action credit as a director. If I'm not mistaken.
Did he do Tomorrowland?
Did he do Tomorrowland? I think he did do Tomorrowland. Yeah, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's the only other one besides Ghost Protocol, which was my first Mission Impossible movie in IMAX experience. And
jeez,
that's another one where I was like, oh my god, I think Tom Cruise is going to die.
here's the thing. First of all, it's a terrific movie. You know, they bring in Jeremy Renner is brought in, Simon Pegg was brought in on that one, and I thought Brad Bird did a really great job with it. And of course, it's got the scene in Dubai where Tom Cruise is outside on the tallest building in the world, and I saw it in IMAX, and I thought I was going to pass out. Like, that's it. Tom Cruise is insane. But it's a great movie, really full of action, and it continued, you know, the series continued to be consistent, and it was terrific. And then the next one was Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, which I thought up until Fallout was the best one. And again, McCrory came in and directed – And it's just it is a tremendously exciting movie, really well made, and it was my favorite of the series until Saturday.
Yeah, I have a soft spot for 3, and I think a lot of it does have to do with the cast and the villain, and I think it was just it re-energized the series after, you know, part 2 being such a letdown that I became really excited about the Mission Impossible movies again after 3. But yeah, no, 5 is just remarkable. And then that's the thing too, is like I mentioned early in my review, is that I was like, Christopher McQuarrie, I don't know.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden I see it and I'm like, wait a minute. Okay. I'm on board with this guy.
Yeah.
Officially.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's become, and he really knocks it out of the park with the latest one. So those are all the Mission Impossible movies. And I think they're all worth seeing. And the latest one being, I think, the best, and you should see it. It made, I'm going to do a little box office here, number one in the country, Mission Impossible Fallout, $61.5 million total. That's the most that any Mission Impossible movie has made on its opening weekend. And I really think that word of mouth is going to continue for this movie. I don't really think that there's going to be any competition this coming week. I mean, The Spy Who Dumped Me, I don't see, a ton of people going out to see that. But I think Fallout's going to be number one again. And deserve.
Yeah, no,
so.
I don't doubt that for a second. Yeah. And I think like you and me, I think we'll be a lot of other people will want to see the second time.
Oh yeah, no, I'm going again. There's no question about it. Number two, Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, $15 million, bringing its total up to $70.4 million. There's an audience for it, and they're going, and they're all going to see it.
I'm not going.
No, I know. I'm not either. Number three, The Equalizer 2, $14 million, bringing its total up to $64 million. That's okay. I actually like that movie. I actually thought it was good.
I'll catch up with it. I thought the first one was just okay.
Yeah.
But I don't mind watching Denzel kick some butt, for a couple hours.
I mean, that's basically, I mean, I would say the last 20 minutes seems endless, the big climax. With a hurricane and a couple of snipers and stuff, that doesn't work and it goes on forever. But there's enough of great Denzel and great Denzel beating the crap out of people that I think it's worth seeing. Number four, Hotel Transylvania 3, $12.3 million, bringing its total up to $119 million. These movies make money, and I don't think they're very good, but they make a lot of money. And this one is bringing them in. Number five, we talked about earlier, underperformed, and I feel bad about that. Teen Titans Go to the Movies, which was a movie that surprised the hell out of me that I really, really loved, and it only made $10.5 million. Take your kids to see that movie and not the damn Hotel Transylvania.
Agreed.
Number six, Ant-Man and the Wasp, $8.4 million, $183 million. It's actually making more than the original Ant-Man, and that's also a very entertaining movie. Did you see it?
Yeah. No, I liked it. I liked it just as much as I liked the first one. I just think that, a great team with Evangeline Lilly and Paul Rudd there. I think they were a blast to watch.
Yeah, no, it was a lot of fun and really funny. And Ant-Man and the Wasp, those are both of the Ant-Man movies are very entertaining. Number seven, Incredibles 2. Man, oh, man. $7.1 million. It's up to $572 million just in America. Over $1 billion worldwide. This is one of the biggest successes. I think it's the biggest numbers for Pixar. And it's a great movie. And it's a really, really great entertaining movie. Number eight, Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, $6.7 million. It's up to about $397 million total in America, but worldwide also doing very well. Not making as much money as the first Jurassic World did,
I'll eventually catch up with them. I don't know why. I have zero interest in this franchise now. I don't know. I like the first three, fine, but I don't know, once Jurassic World came around, I just kind of shrugged it off.
Well, Jurassic World's not that great. This one's good, though. The Fallen Kingdom is good. I think it's actually really good. Number nine, Skyscraper, which is not making a lot of money here in America, but overseas it's doing incredible numbers. And it's $59.1 million total so far. It made $5.4 million this week. I think people are over-rocked. I think there's been too much of The Rock. I mean, the guy, he just made Rampage, was out, in April? Rampage was out. He had Jurassic. He had not Jurassic. What the hell?
Jumanji.
He had the Jumanji. He's on Ballers on HBO. The guy's everywhere. And not that I don't like him, because I do. I think Dwayne Johnson is a you know, really fun presence and a great guy, and I'm happy for his success. And I liked Skyscraper. And I like Rampage. So I don't know. Maybe I'm not sick of him, but I think that there is an overrocked thing that's happening right now.
That's a good point.
Yeah. And then number 10 is The First Purge with $2.2 million, bringing its total up to $65.4 million, assuring that there will be another Purge movie because they don't cost anything to make. I mean, this movie costs...
Again, I don't care.
No, I don't care either. This movie costs $13 million to make, and it made a profit its opening weekend. And they do, and you know, so I mean, for some reason, these movies they people see them, and I'm not really sure why. So, anyway, that's your top 10. Mission Impossible again, Fallout, $61.5 million. If you see it in IMAX, and so there you go. All right, Jim.
And I hope you when you have some time catch up with. Sorry to bother you. I really want to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I will. I definitely will. I'm going to catch up on it at some point. So
it's great.
Okay. All right, man. Thanks for doing this. I appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. It's always a joy and a pleasure. Okay. I'm happy to do it anytime. Thanks.
All right, buddy. And I'll see you Saturday at Flashback.
Absolutely. Looking forward to
take
it.
Take care. There you go. Jim Laskowski helping us out. Colin and Eric on vacation this week. So Jim stepped in and reviewed all the new movies. We talked a little bit about the Mission Impossible franchise and all the cool stuff that's happening on his NowPlayingNetwork.net. All right. We are going to take a break, and we'll be back after this on 720 WGN.